Humbug.
Welcome to Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi. I'm David Klenk.
And I'm Troy Harkin.
And this is our A Christmas Carol episode. This is our first episode of Season 4. It is scheduled for broadcast on Saturday, December 24th. Can you believe it, Troy? Season 4.
It's unbelievable.
We do not have a special guest for this episode. Before that, Troy will give us a spoiler alert.
I'm going to press the special Yuletide spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Thanks, Troy. We are recording this session via Zoom. Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi is a look back to when we fell in love with the speculative genre, to recall these times with fondness and affection. I've found two little reviews about A Christmas Carol. The first one is by Roger Ebert on the 2009 version, Disney's A Christmas Carol, that was animated, that starred Jim Carrey. This is what Roger Ebert said. Disney's A Christmas Carol by Robert Zemeckis and Charles Dickens, of course, is an exhilarating visual experience and proves for the third time he's one of the few directors who knows what he's doing with 3D. And when it comes to the 1951 movie that we'll spend a bit of time on, Donald Clark from the... Yeah, that's a classic. Donald Clark from the Irish Times from Thursday, December 15th, 2016 said the following. There is out there on YouTube a video that mashes 400 adaptations of A Christmas Carol into one impressively cohesive telling of that indestructible story. Consider also that every second officially unrelated Christmas movie fits Dickens' template. A disillusioned grump is won over to the joys of Christmas. Something similar happens to Jennifer Aniston in the current Office Christmas Party. In It's a Wonderful Life, George Bailey begins as Bob Cratchit before turning into Ebenezer Scrooge. Naming any one version... Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to interject in there, David, that, yeah, it occurred to me today, you know, what you were mentioning about It's a Wonderful Life, how it's kind of an inverted Christmas Carol. We have a generous, happy protagonist in George Bailey who begins to take a turn and then requires supernatural intervention on Christmas Eve to save his life and or soul.
Yeah, it's certainly a similar story, and it's a similar theme. And a lot of these kinds of Christmas and these kind of holiday films do that. In fact, A Christmas Carol would be the same if you actually had it run from, you know, in a correct time sync from when he was young up until, but they start with the end of the story or before the end of the story, then have him retell or see what's happening. But anyways, we all know the story. And as Donald Clark continues, naming any one version as the best is therefore fraught with peril. A busy Dickensian could live a life of Christmases without fully absorbing the hip-hop carols, puppet carols, sitcom carols, and animatronic carols. Let us cautiously venture that Brian Desmond Hurst's 1951 retelling is the best British live-action film version. Will that do? On to A Christmas Carol. Yeah. Troy, you want to give some background and give some history, set it in context before we get into a full discussion, don't you?
Well, I do. Okay. But I wanted to check in with you, Dave, and also, you know, a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, all that to our listeners. You know, because it's good to be back. I was going to say it's good to be back just briefly, or it's good to be briefly on our backs, but it's just good to be here. Dave, do you have a favorite Yuletide libation?
My favorite one is the one that you only get at Christmas, like in the stores. It's not year round. You have to just find it then. Eggnog.
Oh yeah. Okay. I was going to ask you about rum and eggnog. If you do that at all.
I'm not sure how often I've actually put rum in my eggnog. I may have done that once or twice, but almost always it's just whatever it is, whether it's Beatrice or whatever, whoever the company is that produces the eggnog, that there's a specific place in the store that I go to where they've got the eggnog, and I make a beeline to it. Grab my and go through several of them during the holidays. I sort of get into I'm sort of addicted to eggnog.
Oh, you and Brian Wilson. There's a famous picture of Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys in the studio. And in this picture, he has four cartons of eggnog opened at the top, like not just like a little bit to pour it, but opened as a full square. And he's got straws in each one.
Wow.
Yeah, like that is hardcore eggnog drinking.
Well, that's using your eggnoggin.
That's right. Thank now, don't you. Of course, the show originates from the Great White North, Canada. And so everything up here has bilingual presentation in the stores. So I wish that eggnog was actually called chicken milk, as it is in French. You know, I would just love to, it just sounds so absurd, chicken milk. I see these people like milking chickens, like, you know, having to like get under there and just like milk these little chicken teats. But lait de poulet or lait de poule sounds much more exotic than chicken milk.
Wow.
Yeah. I will say I'm a Bailey's guy at Christmas time.
Oh, yeah.
Like a little Bailey's. And a few years ago, when Christy and I were in Manhattan, we visited a place that's kitty cornered to the New York Times building called the Beer Authority. And they sold this amazing Christmas cider by a brewer out of Buffalo called McKenzie's. And it was like a Christmas cider, and it had a great cherry cinnamon flavor to it. Do you have any like Christmas culinary favorites?
Well, it's nice that you mentioned the cider, because we hosted a Mahjong, and one of our friends, Gunnar, who happens to be the husband of one of our guests that we had before, Maya Wentz, who did the back to school special with us.
Right.
He is known for his chocolate, but he also brought the makings and made some cider, some apple cider, and that was really tasty. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a fan of both mincemeat tarts as a sort of a dessert type of thing. And again, this is sort of a Canadiana thing, tortiere, which if folks don't know, it's sort of it's a meat pie, but it's particular to Quebec. And yeah, it's a real sort of Christmas season thing that I think I'm the only one in the house who eats it now, but I'll pick one up.
Our tortiere. We do our St. Hubert.
Oh, so
tortiere.
Good.
Yeah, we keep it in the freezer, and then we heat it up and so on. I also like shortbread. Shortbread.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and, you know, this is all part of keeping Christmas well, and Dickens reminds us that that's an important thing. But before we get going on to A Christmas Carol, I've got a question for you, David. Why do the British pronounce clerk as Clark? Clearly that's an E and not an A. And they do the same thing with Derby, which they pronounce.
Derby.
Yeah.
I think we would, the only person to add, we may have to go back in time, but I'm not sure if she's alive anywhere, but we may have to ask Deborah Carr about that.
Yeah. It always throws me when I start to watch A Christmas Carol and he refers to Bob Cratchit as his clerk. He's Bobby Clark. You know, used to confuse me, or his Clark Kent. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine if Clark Kent was spelled C-L-E-R-K, but it's Clark?
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be very odd.
Yeah. Well, should we move on?
Yeah, if you wanted to do your history of A Christmas Carol, then unless I've gone back in time and I've somehow, somehow in our little conversations have gone into it. But I think there have been so many versions and there's a long history, even though I'm sure you will do a nice version of you know, letting us know the history of it in a very quick fashion. I always look forward to this part of the show is you know, this is still one of my favorite parts is when you get into a bit of the history of what we're talking about and then we get into our discussion.
All righty. Charles Dickens was born in Portsmouth, England, on February 7th, 1812. As a boy, he was entertained by his governess, Mary Weller, who enacted nighttime ghost stories for him. During his adolescent years, he was drawn to the theater and British pantomime. It was theater that first attracted his creative passion. After turning his attention to writing, Dickens maintained his strong ear for dialogue and prose that lent itself to public recitals on stage. He first published his novels The Pickwick Papers, Nicholas Nickleby, and Oliver Twist in serial form between 1836 and 1839. As a novelist, he was fast, imaginative, and wildly popular, able to move effortlessly back and forth between humor and tragedy while providing an accurate social barometer of Victorian London. Dickens began work on A Christmas Carol in October 1843. Unlike his previous novels, he did not plan on having it serialized. As a result, he was able to draft out the story from beginning to end. He took long nocturnal walks through London while he wrote the story that November. Dickens described weeping and laughing over the details of the story as it came to him. He finished the book at the beginning of December. The writing took only 6 weeks for him to complete. It was published on December 19th by Chapman and Hall. By Christmas Eve, the 6,000 first edition copies were sold out. Second and third editions accounted for another 9,000 copies, selling into 1844. A Christmas Carol's popularity has never waned. The character Ebenezer Scrooge is one of those immortal figures of English literature like Hamlet, Sherlock Holmes, and Tarzan that everybody knows. It has been suggested that Charles Dickens all but invented Christmas. The Christmas that we know, or at least the one we idealize, is based not on a true account of Victorian Christmas, but rather the holiday has been modeled after the one Dickens described in his classic. In Peter Ackroyd's biography of Dickens, he writes, "It was not yet the festive season that Dickens describes. Christmas cards were not invented until 1846 and Christmas crackers until the 1850s. It was still a one-day holiday when presents were given to children, but there was no general orgy of benevolence and generosity. It was a time of quiet rest. He made it cozy, he made it comfortable, and he achieved this by exaggerating the darkness beyond the small circle of light." It's important here to mention the tradition of sharing ghost stories at Christmas. I've mentioned the influence Dickens' childhood governess had on the writer by performing ghost stories at bedtime for him. This influence was not restricted to A Christmas Carol, as Dickens also penned some 19 other ghost stories, four of them set around the Yuletide. Elizabeth Yuko, in her article How Ghost Stories Became a Christmas Tradition in Victorian England, writes, "Spooky storytelling gave people something to do during the long, dark evenings before electricity. The long midwinter nights meant folks had to stop working early, and they spent their leisure hours huddled close to the fire," says Tara Moore, an assistant professor of English at Elizabethtown College, author of Victorian Christmas in Print. Plus, you didn't need to be literate to retell the local ghost story. And this is why, in the song The Most Wonderful Time of the Year, we get the line, "There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago." From the beginning, A Christmas Carol was adapted to other forms. It has been read aloud on stage since its first year of publication and was also adapted theatrically in 1844 in no fewer than 8 different productions. In 1901, the first silent film version of A Christmas Carol was produced. These various adaptations have never stopped. There have been a lot of Christmas Carol adaptations or parodies on TV, including episodes of Bugs Bunny, WKRP in Cincinnati, The $6 Million Man, Smurfs, Blackadder, The Flintstones, Bewitched, The Simpsons, and Family Guy, just to name a few. So today, David and I, you and me, Dave, we'll be discussing a few of the more memorable adaptations.
Thanks a lot, Troy. Do you have any sort of recollection of when you first were introduced to A Christmas Carol?
You know, I'm wondering if I might have seen one of the weird, sitcom versions. Like, that's possible, but I don't recall that. But what my first memory of the story of Scrooge is would have been likely the 1971 animated version that we'll get into. And it still holds up. And the nice thing about it is it's really tight and economical. Sounds like something you could say about Scrooge himself. That it's like 25 minutes long. They do the whole narrative that quickly. But it's enough, especially, you know, for a kid. So I think that probably was the first thing that I saw. And it was, you know, I didn't really have any sense of writer's craft at that young age, but I was drawn in. Like, whatever was happening in the story, even in a condensed 25-minute version, it drew me in. You know, it was a little bit scary, but you had to stay with it, and it balances the sentimental with the frights, and you just want to know where this thing is going and what's going to happen to this guy. So that was probably it for me. What about you, David?
Would have probably been in the early 70s, possibly late 60s. You know, around that, this time of year, you got all the films, you know, you've got The Christmas Story, you've got Miracle on 34th Street, It's a Wonderful
Die
Life,
Hard,
and so on. Die Hard, of course. You've got all the classics. And A Christmas Carol was certainly on. And because it's such a good version, the 1951 version with Alastair Sim, you could always catch that, you know, it might be on 2 or 3 times a week on various stations. And for sure, I would have seen it then. And it still held up even in the 70s, even still holds up today. The effects and the acting and just the whole story, it certainly holds up. And what's weird is just,
oh, yeah,
just in the last day, you had recommended the 2009 version, the Jim Carrey one, which was an animated one that you had said was very good. And based on your recommendation, you've never steered me wrong. I watched it, and it reminds me of things like Triplets of Belleville and other really good animated films. And of course, you're right about all of the things like A Muppet Christmas, you know, Muppets did a version, and various shows have done that. It's almost like Groundhog Day, where there's just been so many versions and retellings. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and I'm thinking with the Alastair Sim one, it was always on. Like, Christmas Carol, you know, at midnight was always on. It was, and I think one channel, you know, like, you could definitely find A Christmas Carol, you could definitely find It's a Wonderful Life airing. And it's almost like they, now, of course, you know, Santa actually comes with his gifts, but for the parents that were up actually putting their presents under the tree, it was a nice thing that you could have that on while you were, you know, doing that. Or I remember, like, assembling like train sets and stuff like that at like 1 a.m. Oh my gosh, it was so nice when my kids got older and I didn't have to do assemble toys at like 1 and 2 in the morning. I was also going to mention that Alastair Sim, who is Scrooge in the 51 version, he reprises his role in that animated version I was telling you about from 1971. So he actually plays Scrooge in the animated version. That's probably a reason why it works so well. And I guess by that point, that's 20 years later. So I don't know how much you would actually pick it up by voice, but he would sound a little older, a little probably more like the age Scrooge would have been in the story.
Wow, that's kind of cool. Troy, you had mentioned all of the versions and the various things, and you had sort of, I don't know if how much of it you covered in the history, but did you want to just talk a minute about that? And if some of the ones that I've, I've seen, I can come, because I just watched Scrooged today.
Okay.
Well, I've never seen it. So go ahead.
Yeah, which it's a funny film because it obviously has a darkness to it. But let's sort of just go through this a little chronologically. And this is not all encompassing, but prior to the Alistair Sim version, there was a Hollywood version. It was an MGM production in 1938. We get the first famous sound version of A Christmas Carol, and that one starred Reginald Owen. And I find it quite good as well, but it's really fast. It has a running time of only 69 minutes. So it's, you know, for sort of the first major production, it's not bad, but it obviously gave room for the Alistair Sim version to build on it. And as we mentioned, that was 1951.
And one thing you mentioned about these kinds of things, I've just been sick with COVID and the cold of the flu. For those who may listen to this podcast a few years down the road, back in December of 2022, we thought we were past everything. We'd already come out of the pandemic. We weren't wearing masks anymore. We were not social distancing as much. And then let's just say some of that might have been a mistake, because there have been more people sick at work and more people catching things. And we're at the moment, we are running out of medicine for children and other kinds of things to help adults and others with medications related to cold and flu. So this time of year, so I haven't had a chance to be as prepared as you have, Troy, for this thing. So I did not watch the 38 movie, but I did watch the 51 one again. Now, what was the next one on your list?
Well, it's something that I came across today. But before I get to that, I just wanted to mention most of these things, a lot of them are available, if not through streaming. There's a lot of them available. Oh my gosh, now I'm losing my voice. A lot of them are available on YouTube. And in fact, this I found today on YouTube. In 1964, we get a TV film called A Carol for Another Christmas that was written by Rod Serling. And as you know, I'm a huge Serling fan. I love both Night Gallery and The Twilight Zone. And I've seen a number of his other productions like Requiem for a Heavyweight. So I thought, well, I'll definitely give this a look. It was, again, written by Serling. It's a stellar production. It's like a who's who of people of the era. So it was produced and directed by Joseph Mankiewicz, Hollywood legend. The music, the score was by Henry Mancini. It starred Sterling Hayden as Grudge. He's called Grudge in this version. And it featured Britt Eklund, Peter Sellers, Eva Marie Saint, Ben Gazzara, Steve Lawrence, Pat Hingle, and Robert Shaw. And it originally aired on ABC TV. And as I was telling you before we started recording, unfortunately, it's not super stellar. It's not stellar. It's a little heavy-handed in the way that Serling could be sometimes. But it was a really interesting take. It was like set in America, and rather than it being about a man who is like a financial miser, it's this fellow has lost his son in a war fighting for the U.S., and now he's got a grudge, I guess. He's very bitter, and it goes from there. But, I mean, if you're interested in having a look at a slightly different take on the story, it's like more a jumping off point from the original, do give it a go. It's on YouTube. Then the next one I have is the animated version that we were talking about. It was released in 1971 originally. It's the animated version by Chuck Jones, the famous Warner Brothers artist, animator, and Richard Williams. Alistair Sim returned to voice Scrooge. Many of us grew up with this one as it began airing on TV soon after its theatrical release, and it won an Academy Award for Best Animated Short Film in 1972. And definitely have a look for that one on YouTube, because it still holds up despite its super short running time. And if you wanted to, like, if you somehow know somebody that does not know what A Christmas Carol is, this might be the version to just introduce them to, or refresh their memory.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah, and oh, definitely, because what I've done is just gone onto the internet quickly just to see some of the images associated with that movie, the 71 one. And definitely I remember the Scrooge character, and a lot of these images are coming back to me because I would have seen this 50 plus years ago.
What do I want to say? The sort of camera work and the art design is very sophisticated. I was really impressed rewatching this. Then we get another animated version. We get the 1983 Mickey's Christmas Carol, which featured Scrooge McDuck as the miser, and Mickey Mouse as Bob Cratchit. And it actually, I checked out some of this again. It has a really moving scene with Mickey Mouse as Bob Cratchit standing at the grave of Tiny Tim and clutching his crutch. It was like very surprisingly moving, or maybe I'm just getting really soppy in my old age. I did find it a little bit funny that, I mean, obviously Scrooge McDuck is named after Scrooge, right? Like that's the character's name in the Disney world at large. But the funny thing about Scrooge McDuck, I thought, was that it is this really, you know, old school stereotypical, you know, certainly possibly cancelable, that you've named a tightwad character and you've given him a Scottish accent, you know, which I always thought was a little bit funny with Scrooge McDuck. The George C. Scott version came in 1984. I remember seeing it at the time, but I do not remember many of the details. Also, it's out there in streaming and YouTube and whatnot. And then we get into the film that you saw today, which is cool. I'm looking forward to talking to you about it, David, because it was your first view. But Scrooged, starring Bill Murray as Frank Lumpy Cross, a grumpy TV executive. Also had Karen Allen, Carol Kane, Robert Mitchum, Lee Majors. It was directed by Richard Donner, who had done Superman and The Omen and Goonies. It was co-written by one of my favorite writers of that era, Michael O'Donoghue, who had written for both National Lampoon and Saturday Night Live. There's a fantastic soundtrack featuring Robbie Robertson, Miles Davis, Annie Lennox, and Al Green. So tell me, what did you think on your first viewing there, David?
Well, I don't know why I hadn't watched it before. I mean, I have like stuff with Bill Murray in it. For some reason, Groundhog's Day, I had just seen like 2 or 3 years ago or 4 years ago. People had recommended it. I finally watched it. And my God, that's such a good film. And I remember, of course, Bill Murray from Saturday Night Live, also from the movie Stripes and the Caddyshack and so on. So it's just great. But I just had enough. And with Alistair Sim's portrayal in A Christmas Carol, I didn't want some other Christmas Carol.
Sure.
So I just ignored it. And then I said, you know what? I got to watch this thing. The opening sequence reminds me a bit of Tropic Thunder with all those fake things that they had done in Tropic Thunder that were so brilliant and funny. Here we've got Lee Majors showing up with The Night the Reindeer Died, which was incredible. Yeah. Then you've got Bob Goulet's old-fashioned Cajun Christmas, which is just a hoot. You got Father Loves Beaver. You'll love it. IBC, you will. Y-U-L-E, you'll love it. And then you've got John Houseman being the narrator. And you've got Buddy Hackett as Ebenezer Scrooge, Jamie Farr in a cameo, the Solid Gold Dancers, and Mary Lou Retton. Like, this is the most insane, funny, brilliant opening couple minutes of a film. Like, it's almost like the Gold Member, where they have all the different people playing the characters, where you had Tom Cruise and so on, and Danny DeVito as Mini-Me. It was just so much fun, so much energy, and so good that it reminded me a
Carol
bit.
Kane. I loved Carol Kane.
Yeah.
Carol Kane is one of the ghosts. Yeah.
Yes. She's an absolute standout. And that was something that Alexa, because we were both watching it, and Alexa said, oh yeah, I love this moment with Carol Kane in it. So there's so much good in that, in Scrooged.
Yeah, you know, the nice thing about Scrooge is it is a nice alternative to a lot of the very sentimental Christmas stuff that goes on. It's a lot of fun, and it was a different approach, and it was almost like South Park before South Park in terms of how irreverent it was.
And Bobcat Goldthwait, who was almost unrecognizable. The first thing I recognize, of course, is his voice.
Yeah.
I think, oh my God, that's Bobcat Goldthwait. Then I look up at the screen because I'm busy working on this episode and other things. And I look up and I think, okay, before he really changed a bit, this was him as almost like the version that's the business guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yeah. And you know, today it struck me that could have been recast as Rick Moranis, because he sort of reminded me a lot of Rick Moranis in Ghostbusters.
Well, these kinds of stories, almost like Christmas ones, like Traitors, you know, that idea of taking someone and changing their life and then seeing, you know, that Traitors obviously is a bit of a different theme, but the idea that you can take anyone and put them into a position of power or give them this authority and see if they actually change or not. And that's what the theme for these kinds of things are, is about change. It's about thinking about the people who aren't doing as well as you.
Yes. Yes. Oh, okay. And that reminds me. Okay. You know what? I'm just going to touch on it really quickly. One of the things that I loved in the 2009 version was that they included the bit about ignorance and want being underneath the gown of the Ghost of Christmas Present. That was very, very powerful. Anyway, we'll get to that in a second. Mm. But final note on Scrooged was, I saw that an opening day when that came out. And, you know, the final number in the song, which I think is Put a Little Love in Your Heart.
Yes.
Is that was playing. People were actually clapping in the audience. It was kind of cool. Like, it was almost like being at a concert or seeing a play. You know, it was
cool. It's powerful and emotional too. Like Alexa was mentioning how that's one of her favorite songs, and it's such a perfect moment in that movie for that song to come on and for people to be listening to that.
Oh,
just beautiful.
Sorry, spontaneous Beatleism. I have always found that that song and Baby You're a Rich Man, penned by John Lennon, but by the Beatles from Magical Mystery Tour, man, you can really weave in and out of those two melodies. Like, they are very similar, but I do love the original. Anyway, just wanted to throw that out there. It was just off the top of my head. Okay. We're going on to 1992. Hold on to my robe, David, and I will take you to 1992. Ooh, there we go. 1992. That's the Muppet Christmas Carol. And this was the first Muppet movie made after the passing of Jim Henson. And this was with Michael Caine as Scrooge. I really love this film. I find it surprisingly effective. And it's a good introduction for kids to the story. Mojo ranked this as their number two adaptation of A Christmas Carol. I quite like it. I'm not sure it would be close, but I don't know if I would have it at two, but it's a well-loved film for sure. And again, getting to see Caine do Scrooge is fabulous.
Michael Caine is one of the one of the great actors. And this is also one that's been rated very high on Rotten Tomatoes as a 76%. It certainly did well at the box office.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
1999, we get a TV version with Patrick Stewart as Scrooge. Again, I have seen it, but it's been a number of years. It's out there. Any thoughts on this one, David?
I can't really comment on it. I had it taped at one point. I had plans to watch it, but I never got around to seeing it.
I remember that the scene with Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come was very intense, especially for TV. Like it involved, you know, falling into the grave type of thing.
And well, I think of Patrick Stewart. I think of him and Data on the holodeck, where Data is reenacting a scene from A Christmas Carol.
Yes.
And he's trying to emote as if he's actually has the emotion chip and he's actually fearful of this creature, this ghost. And then Patrick Stewart as Captain Picard is actually giving him acting tips about how to actually bring that character to life.
Yeah, and that episode was in the back of my mind, and I kept thinking, is there like a full version of this somewhere? And I just couldn't recall. But we then go up to 2009 and the version we've been talking about, directed by Robert Zemeckis, who had also given us Back to the Future, Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And a few years prior to that, he'd done Polar Express with Tom Hanks. And when that one came out, I found that the technique of, I think they call it live action capture or something, it wasn't quite there yet. And it sort of like, there was something about the look of it that bothered me. But by the time they get around to doing it with Scrooge, it's much smoother. Mm. And after the initial sort of couple of minutes of looking at it, you really get used to it. Or I found I did. I don't know about you, David. Did you find, was that an all right look for you, the animation that they had, the computer animation?
Yeah, definitely for the 2009 movie with Jim Carrey, the animation was so good. And it really brought me in, and it just, yeah, I definitely agree with the Roger Ebert, because he gave it 4 stars. That this version, I'm so glad that you recommended it and said, hey, you got to see this. And you have even mentioned, I think, that you thought that this may have been your favorite of the, if not in your top two of the Christmas Carol adaptations.
Yeah, I avoided it at first, and maybe like you did, because I don't know if I was making the connection to Polar Express or not, but my sister had seen it and she raved about it. She like just said, you really have to see this. I know the type of thing you like. And she said, you have to watch this. You know, it being A Christmas Carol, you're probably not going to watch it unless it's December. And that's sort of what happened to me. And as soon as I knew we were doing this episode, I thought, well, I better check this one out. And yeah, I really liked it. I saw it twice since we started planning for this. And the one thing, I don't know how I missed it the first time. I don't know if I went and made a tea or something, but there's one little scene that I'm not nuts about, and I've seen other reviewers comment on it, and it's a scene that they add, I don't know why, where I guess it's in with the third ghost, and Scrooge is being chased by horses because I think the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come is like driving a hearse. And so he's got these horses with the casket in the back, and it becomes this almost like fantasy druggy scene where he's chasing after Scrooge, and Scrooge then becomes miniature. And it was just an odd little thing. Now, clearly this is all happening through dreams, so I guess you can have license to do that, but it's the only part where I felt they stepped away from the original text, and they were doing such a good job of bringing to life the original book. But that's one little thing. It's really worth a watch, and they really do capture the spirit of the film. And like I said, they throw in that element of having ignorance and want, the two little children underneath the robe of the ghost of Christmas Present, which was like, there was some moments in that film that are shocking. Now, it's nice because, like, I don't know how young I would want a child to see that film, but it's not crazy. It's not like Texas Chainsaw Massacre or something, but there are definitely some intense moments, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So the following year, we get, in 2010, we get the Doctor Who, A Christmas Carol. It was the sixth Doctor Who Christmas special and starred Matt Smith's Doctor and Michael Gambon, who was Dumbledore, as the Scrooge-like Khazran Sardak. There are some good laughs in this one. I've seen it twice now. There's a point where the Doctor refers to Santa as simply Jeff because he's on first name, first term. What's the phrase? He's on, what's the phrase, David? First name terms. That's it.
Right.
He's on first name terms with Santa, so he calls him Jeff, which I thought was really funny. And there's a point, too, where there's a party scene. And so the Doctor comes running out and he says, hurry up, we have to leave. I've just proposed to Marilyn Monroe. And I just thought that was a funny little thing that they threw in there. But a pretty enjoyable episode, wouldn't you say, David?
I think you're right. Sometimes people just have a bit of license or have a bit of fun with the concept or just try to go somewhere with it. And the more odd or strange, sometimes the better the result.
That's right. That's right. And then as you remembered, this is the one with the sort of flying fish, not flying fish, flying shark, throughout some of the earlier parts of the episode.
Very good. Very well done. Like what happened with Doctor Who was they did have these annual Christmas episodes. We'll get into this when we do our Doctor Who a podcast, which may be coming up fairly soon.
I like that they also pick up and pay tribute to the whole tradition of the British Christmas pantomime. So I thought it was cool that they have a lot of fun with those episodes, in particular this one. Song in it too. You know, we get that really beautiful song, which is very much in keeping with the tradition of the British pantomime.
Yeah, and there was also another one of the Christmas episodes where I think it may have been a different doctor who actually meets up with Charles Dickens himself. They've certainly gone there and plumbed that. That's what their best episodes do is it does get to that emotional moment. And I think they did a good job on that one that was clearly a Christmas carol.
Yeah,
definitely.
So I just have three quickies here. In 2017, there was The Man Who Invented Christmas with Dan Stevens as Dickens and Christopher Plummer as Scrooge. And it was a highly fictionalized version of Dickens' creation of the book and its characters. It's entertaining, and it's a novel way to enjoy another side of A Christmas Carol, not a strict adaptation itself. And along those lines of sort of, I guess, more of a sequel than anything, this year, and this year being 2022, if you were, you know, listening in 2022, although you may not be, I guess, was Spirited with Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds. Again, not an adaptation, but a kind of sequel to the Dickens story. It has its moments. It feels like it needs to be, I thought, maybe 15 minutes shorter. But it does have that great moment, the musical number, Good Afternoon, which you've seen this one, right, David?
I don't think I have.
Oh, no? Okay. It's a new one. It's odd because like it does a number of songs, but it's not like... It's not the type of musical where it's 50% musical. You know, it felt to me randomly they would go into songs. 20 minutes would pass and there's like not been a song. And all of a sudden they start singing at you and you realize, oh, it is a musical. And there is a new version out on Netflix now, which I have not seen, called Scrooge, A Christmas Carol. They're going with both titles. It's also an animated musical version. So again, I've not seen to it. It looks like it's along the lines of like a Disney Pixar thing, like Frozen or whatnot. That's what I have. Although I was thinking, David, you know, somebody really should do a sexy Scrooge, like not a porn version. That likely has already been done, but a sexy period Scrooge, like Bridgerton, with a tightwad miser and ghosts and lots of heaving cleavage and tight butts. But I suppose that's sort of what Bill Murray's character was doing in Scrooge, right?
Yeah. I'm not sure if they can do that nowadays, but you never know. Or maybe it might have to be Ebenezer Scrooge and zombies. Like we might have to all these classics.
Sure.
But a Christmas even when Carol with zombies.
When I was mentioning like butts, I was actually thinking like for the ladies. I know the ladies enjoy Bridgerton and the butts of some of the male characters. So that was my Christmas gift to them.
Not to be confused with Seymour butts, of course.
Yeah. Or the gentlemen out there that prefer butts. So I'm just going to leave that now before we do get canceled on our Christmas show.
Yeah. Now, we might want to move on to our sequence about these are a few of our favorite words. Because I always like going back to the, and in some cases, these ones are so well known, just like more soup. So in this one, things like bah, humbug. And there was even a recent Jeopardy episode where they mentioned a certain word that was used so many times in the first chapter of a book, and it turned out to be humbug. And Scrooge saying something like, many can't go there. They would rather die. And Scrooge says, well, if they would rather die, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population, which is pretty dark.
pretty cold.
Yeah. The ghost mentioning and that whole, the various versions having that Jacob Marley being the person who's walking around with these chains has always been evocative and has always been done well in the movie. So one of the things is I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will, and of my own free will, I wore it. And of course, there was sometimes I've used this phrase, are there no prisons, when someone said something kind of nutty or something. The union workhouses, are they still in operation? Like the whole little sequence where he says, oh, put me down for nothing, and the person said, oh, you mean you want to be anonymous? and of course his response is, I want to be left alone.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And his response to the carolers, which is also done in Scrooge too, and of course him liking it later, God bless us everyone, is one of the more famous lines. And of course, the main thing, which is almost feel like this whole thing with Dickens and A Christmas Carol almost feels like a Twilight Zone episode. So,
oh yeah,
this whole thing with Scrooge saying men's courses will foreshadow certain ends to which, if persevered in, they must lead. But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me. So the idea is that you have a chance to actually be able to change the way you act with other people, the way you are as a person, as a human being. And that will mean that maybe someone there, like, for example, Tiny Tim, there won't be that empty crutch by this chair in the corner of the room, that he will somehow get through this. You know, that if you change your ways, you can actually affect other people in a positive way. It's an important thing for me.
It's a lot of people's favorite books. It's one of my favorite books. But the thing about it is that Dickens always, because, you know, he started with a love for theater, he always intended for his work to be read aloud. So he had a great ear. Like, he just had such a great ear. And I'm always taken back when you start reading this book, it just carries you along. Like, there's nothing that you gloss over, you know, it just carries you. It's so well done. And I'm going to say this before I forget, more of gravy than of grave about you. Like, that's a great line.
Yeah.
You know, and he's pushing back against this like phenomena, this supernatural experience he's having, which is, I love. It's like, it shows you that, you know, he doesn't give in right away. Right. It's like this guy has some backbone. The way the story begins, I'm just going to read the first paragraph. It's wonderful. First of all, the first sentence, Marley was dead to begin with. Like, that's just like, you're there. I'm into the story.
Yeah.
Like, I'm into the story. Like, thank you. Like, most people can't do that. And to me, like, if you can start any sort of story, a novel, novella, short story like that, like, I'm in. So Marley was dead to begin with. There's no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it. And Scrooge's name was good upon change for anything he chose to put his hand to. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. And, you know, that's just fabulous writing.
Yeah. Even if you say clerk instead of Clark, it's still a great.
Oh, did I do that? I guess I did. Thank you. Yeah, let me insert that. The clock.
Yeah. Yeah. But part of it is, and I'm glad that you mentioned this whole thing about him reading. Because you pick up a lot from doing that, from reading the stuff aloud. But also Dickens himself, from what I read a bit of the history, read the thing somewhere between 150 and 180 times in front of at various readings that he did of just reading that, which is not a full-based novel where it takes hours and hours and hours. This is still like a novella or whatever. It's still a chunk of writing. But it's manageable. Like, it might take an hour or two or however long it might take for him to read it. But just by reading it, you've got that ability that he had of being able to help. You know, it's like a storyteller, that concept of someone who goes up and tells a story and just brings you into it.
Yeah. And, you know, David, that brings me back to your question about early experiences with it. Now, this was not my first, but one of my favorite was, I have a memory that CBC used to do a reading of it, and I assume a condensed version or something, but they would do a reading of it on Christmas Eve in the 80s. And I used to love hearing that. Now, I hope I'm not totally off about that, but that's in my brain as a
want John Houseman to read it myself. Just like in Scrooge, where he's the narrator, just have him with his wonderful voice.
Are we ready to move on to our dream casting and Schrodinger's cast?
Absolutely. Do you want to introduce the concept, and then we can go over
and almost an introduction to us, because it's been a while. And also let's hear that dream casting theme.
Dream casting. Yeah. Dream casting, baby.
Oh, good to hear that again. So dream casting is this thing that we do where we go through whatever work we've been looking at. And we imagine or reimagine the film if it could have any actor living or dead in it. Just somebody that we actually think, you know, would do well in these roles. And the roles that we're looking at in particular for A Christmas Carol is Scrooge, Bob Cratchit, Tiny Tim, Marley, and the three ghosts. So do you want to lead off, David, with your first?
Okay. Well, did you want to go over the characters and who originally starred in them?
Oh, sure.
In the 51 and this is from, film.
Okay. So in that version, the 1951 Christmas Carol, which was also known as Scrooge. I think I covered that, right? I hope I did.
Yep.
Yeah. So Ebenezer Scrooge, as we know, was Alistair Sim. Bob Cratchit was played by Mervyn Johns. Tiny Tim was Glyn Dearman, played by Glyn Dearman. Michael Dolan played the Spirit of Christmas Past. Francis DeWolf was the Spirit of Christmas Present. And oh my God, we have the name that... Do I take a run at this?
I would probably say Czeslaw, but I might not.
I like that. Czeslaw Konarski.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's billed as C. Konarski, which probably makes a bit more sense in the film.
The Spirit of Christmas Yet to Come. Too bad they couldn't have done it like in Frankenstein, where it's the monster? Question mark. Anyway. All right. So there we go. So who is your Ebenezer Scrooge for your dream cast, David?
Okay. So what I'm doing is I've got them. Usually we try to break these up. So what I've got is for Scrooge, Cratchit, and Tim, we can do maybe our dream cast each as opposed to doing one at a time. But it's up to you how you want.
Okay. That's fine. That's fine. Let's do that.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the first three, Ebenezer Scrooge, Bob Cratchit, and Tiny Tim. My version, what I have for Ebenezer Scrooge is Ian Holm, who was the Bilbo Baggins in Lord of the Rings. So I think he's a very good actor, and I think he would do a good version of Scrooge.
Ian Holm is one of my favorite actors. Oh, can we discuss Ian Holm first?
For sure.
Or do you want... So Ian Holm, loved in Henry V, he plays the Welsh character. I forget the character's name. And like everything he's ever done, I've loved him in. He was in the Canadian film, it's just the great Sweet Hereafter. The Sweet Hereafter, about the bus wreck. And he plays the lawyer that comes into the town to set up lawsuits. But Ian Holm, that is a great choice, David.
Yeah, and I got Colin Firth as Bob Cratchit. And basically the Colin Firth from, because you got young and old of each actor. So I basically had him from the Love Actually film. And then Tiny Tim as, I had Macaulay Culkin, who was Kevin in Home Alone, I thought would have been a perfect kind of Tiny Tim.
Yep.
Maybe I've gone too far. I'm not sure.
And good call on the Colin Firth because, it was Colin Firth who was actually in the 2009 version. He voiced that character. So good call.
That's right.
Okay. So I'm giving you my top three, right? So, okay. I know I often, have to finagle my answer for these, but the first person that came to my mind was Pete Postlethwaite. I don't know if you recall him or the actor. I always think of him as Romeo, as the priest in Romeo and Juliet, the Baz Luhrmann version. Very tall, gaunt Irish actor, I believe. But I then realized Richard E. Grant is the man that I want. Richard E. Grant, who is in one of my favorite films of all time, with Nolan I. He's already curmudgeonly. Even at that age, he would have made a great Scrooge. And see, I like a gaunt Scrooge, which is why I really liked the look of Jim Carrey's Scrooge in the 2009 version. As much as I really do love the Alistair Sim, I actually like the way he looks in the animated version because he is tall and gaunt. And to me, that suggests this guy is not going to eat any more than he ever needs to because that would be spending too much money. He would not do that. So I love seeing a gaunt Ebenezer Scrooge. My Bob Cratchit. I wanted to say Martin Freeman, but then I thought I say Martin Freeman for almost every dream casting we do. So I thought, give him a rest. Go to the bullpen. Let's get another arm in there. I went with Rhys Shearsmith from The League of Gentlemen. He has a similar look to Martin Freeman. He's just got a very, pleasant face and manner. So anyway, I went with Rhys Shearsmith also from, I'm not even going to say I went with Rhys Shearsmith. T- Tiny Tim was tough because I wanted a British child. Every child that kept coming to mind was not British. So then I thought of, just in brainstorming, I thought of Jack Wilde, who was the Artful Dodger in the 1960s version of Oliver. Steve Marriott, who was also a child actor before joining the Small Faces, also had played the Artful Dodger, thought about him. And then, I guess because I was now going to a musician, Steve Marriott, it hit me. Ringo Starr was a sickly child. And Ringo Starr also, post-Beatles, did a lot of acting. So I thought, let's go back in time, because that's what happens in A Christmas Carol. Let's go back in time and get Ringo Starr as a sickly child to be Tiny Tim. So there you go.
Wow.
That's my first three.
Yeah, and for me, one of the things I liked Richard E. Grant in, if you want to go back to him for a minute, was a movie with Melissa McCarthy called Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Oh, yes.
She's forging things, but he is so good in that movie. And that's from 2018.
I love that film, David. And one of the things that drew me to it was I saw some reviews from England where they said, you can imagine the character that he played as being the same character from Withnell and I from 1987 or 1988, which I don't know if you've ever seen Withnell and I, but it's so funny. And he plays that same sort of scoundrel type of character. Anyway, yes.
Well Richard E. Grant is one of Lex's favorite actors.
Yeah, oh, he's brilliant.
All right, so I'm going to go on to the next ones. Oh, no, go ahead.
No, that's it. I guess... Okay,
I'm going to go...
Did we do a Marley?
No, because we do six. And
okay. Okay, then. That's fine.
These were the six that you chose.
That's fine. So, yep, no problem.
I've got... So for the past, present, and yet to come, these are the three spirits of Christmas. And what I've got is the first one is the one from the past, is Jerry Orbach, who was Lumiere in Beauty and the Beast, partly because, and what was nice about the animated 2009 one is it's closer to the actual book because it has the Ghost of Christmas Past is supposed to have this burning head and this thing that puts out the
conical cap. Yes.
Yes. Yes. And that was done so well in that 2009 animated, film that I thought, well, why not have Lumiere in Beauty and the Beast?
Oh, nice.
So I went with Jerry Orbach. Now, when it comes to the ghost and the spirit of Christmas present,
I just want to say, David, I just want to say, I like the way your brain works there. I miss doing these with you.
Just
real quickly. Sorry, one more time there. That is when that point in the film where we see the spirit of Christmas past in the 2009 version, that's when I realized I'm in, I'm sold, I'm there.
Yeah, okay. They took the time to do it right. And to do something like that was quite amazing. So,
interrupting.
No, no, don't worry. So I've got for my Dreamcast for the spirit of Christmas present, which when you have a sense of that character who has done so well in the 51, you got this guy with this beard. You got someone who almost seems like he's the harvest guy. Like he is the father kind of, like Father Christmas almost. And hence the Christmas present is like a present. So I was thinking of Brian Blessed as Augustus in I, Claudius, and also a large actor who was Robert Baratheon in Game of Thrones. Mark Addy is sort of this larger than life, bigger, bearded actor
that
would fit in perfectly.
Yeah, and he's also he was also in Henry V and was in a number of the Kenneth Branagh Shakespeare productions. Yeah, that is inspired, David. Good call.
Well, wasn't Brian Blessed Hawkman in He'll Save Every One of Us?
Flash?
Flash Gordon. Wasn't he Hawkman? Brian Blessed? Wasn't he in?
Let me tell you, Mr. I've never seen Scrooged before. I've never seen Flash or Flash Gordon.
Yeah, it's worth it just for the soundtrack, because the soundtrack was by Queen.
Yeah.
And it's pretty darn good.
I didn't. And it's like, not like I avoided it. It's just, I missed it when it came out, like in whenever that was, like 1980. And
well, it was 1980. So you're right.
Yeah. So I've just never seen it on any other format or anything, but I will if I get the chance. Okay. Who do you have for the ghost of yet?
Dr. Zarkov was played by Topol. Sam Jones played Flash Gordon, but yeah, Max von Sydow is quite the cast for that film. It's a very odd one. I have a feeling that it might be a film that you might like. Let's go on to the next one. Yeah, and I've missed my fair share of films. Let's just put it out there, like a lot. So, and my final one is The Spirit of Christmas Yet to Come, which is the most sort of the scary of the spirits.
Sorry, I'm looking ahead. I shouldn't do that.
So I've got Ray Fiennes, even though it says Ralph Fiennes, I think it goes, I'd have to check the pronunciation or CMB injury, but I think it's Ray Fiennes. He goes by Ray Fiennes.
Yeah, it is, but he should also, he should have worked as a clerk.
Yeah, he could have been a clerk. But Lord Voldemort in Harry Potter, Ralph Fiennes would be someone that would be, I think, very good. So those are my three. Jerry Orbach, who's great in everything. Brian Blessed or Mark Addy. But I would have to, if I had to choose between them, I would have to go with Brian Blessed and Ralph Fiennes. No one smiles like Brian Blessed as Hawkman in that.
And I think that's true.
I might be getting confused here, but wasn't Brian Blessed also, was he Gloucester in Henry V, the Kenneth Branagh Henry V?
Well, he was in Henry V. I don't recall. He probably was Gloucester, yeah.
Yeah. But I've always liked him in anything he's been in. And so what do you got for your ghosts, your spirits?
Well, I wanted, because of the 2009 film, I wanted somebody that looked kind of unique. And in the book, Dickens does not say androgynous, but he does talk about how the spirit has this quality of, like both being old and young, which I thought was kind of cool. Anyway, I wanted somebody that did have a bit of an odd look. I thought about Anya Taylor-Joy at first, but I went with Samantha Morton, which I don't know. You know her?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I really liked her in Minority Report and Sweet and Low Down and John Carter.
She was also in almost a full season, if not more, of The Walking Dead, where she plays a scary character in that.
Well, you know what? Now that the series is done, I'm going to finally go back and sort of cherry pick episodes. And I have the final episode and the sort of Talking Dead after it and the red carpet. I'm all set to do that soon. Really liked her. Okay, so Ghost of Christmas Present. So I was looking for Jovial. I had three people in mind. One was Brendan Gleeson, who has just been nominated for Best Actor for the Banshees of Inisherin. Great film, by the way. If you're listening to this and it's current, that film is fabulous. It was nominated for 8 Golden Globes this week, and it is a fantastic film.
Yeah, Alexa and I have it on our list for sure.
Yeah. So I thought about him. I was torn between these two, though. John Candy, who to me is Mr. Jovial. And I mean, obviously we all love him, but he was already in two great Christmas films in Home Alone and, well, not Christmas, but I guess a holiday film, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Mm. Bigger Than Life. But I think I'm settling on Nick Offerman. You know, if we were doing this as a stage production, I could have both John Candy and Nick Offerman. And, you know, if you were lucky, you'd get to see, you know, either one of them in the role, but I'm sticking with Nick Offerman. And I guess that takes us to the ghost spirit of Christmas Yet to Come. For me, the requirement was height. So I went with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is my my ghost, because he'd be really haunting, looming over you, this gaunt figure. And that's my dream cast, David.
We're on to the into Schrodinger's cast.
Our Schrodinger's cast, unlike our dream cast, where we think this is the best thing that we could do with people living or dead, it's all over the place, or potentially is all over the place. And it's gotten wilder and wackier. And I, in the past, a few episodes have gone to total randomness for my choices. Anything else you want to say about Schrodinger's cast, David?
Yeah, sometimes there's things that connect them, like maybe they're all from the World Wrestling Entertainment. They were all
or the Brady Bunch.
Or the Brady Bunch or what have you. Or maybe they're famous scientists from the past, like whatever it is. There's something that some thread.
That's right.
Doesn't always have to be, but it can.
No. And sometimes, yeah, you tend to be a little bit more prone to the theme. And as I was saying, I've now gone into more total randomness.
Right. So I'm going to start with my first three, which are the Scrooge, Ebenezer Scrooge, Bob Cratchit, and Tiny Tim. And what I've done is I've taken people who, in some cases, have gone on to acting, but are all who have won at least, whether it's a bronze, silver, or a gold in the Olympic Games. So what I did was I started with Buster Crabbe, who won the gold medal in the 400 meter freestyle in 1932. So Buster Crabbe is Ebenezer Scrooge. I've got Johnny Weissmuller, who won the gold medal in the 100 meter freestyle in 1924. Johnny Weissmuller as Bob Cratchit. Now, maybe you'd be a rather big Bob Cratchit, but he's my Bob Cratchit at the moment.
Oh, I could just, and I can see him mourning over Tiny Tim with his like,
Well, was some of those films, they had a son, and didn't he call him Boy or something like that? Yeah, so it's almost like Boy is Tiny. I should actually add Boy is Tiny Tim, but I don't think Boy ever won any Olympic medals.
That's
so
right.
Tiny Tim, in this case, I have Ronda Rousey, who is known for, I guess it's MMA or whatever. I don't think it's wrestling, even though she may have done some of that, but I think she was doing some mixed martial arts. But anyway, she won a bronze medal in the 2008 Olympics for judo, Ronda Rousey. So my three are Buster Crabbe, Johnny Weissmuller, and Ronda Rousey. And Johnny Weissmuller, as we all know, is from Tarzan, from the Tarzan films. And Buster Crabbe is also from the genre world, so to speak, where he was, of course, Flash Gordon back in the 30s, you know, fighting Ming the Merciless. So he was, and I think he got the role of Flash Gordon because he actually won that gold medal. He was known enough that they said, hey, why don't we have him as Flash Gordon? They may have said, hey.
Buster Crabbe also made a guest appearance on the Buck Rogers show from the 80s. It was kind of cool to see him in a scene.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so Schrodinger's cast. So in the past, I have used the random name generator 9000. But it's actually in the shop right now. So along with a little bit of help from my wife, Christy, we threw 400 names into a hat earlier today, and we just picked names from the hat. So my Scrooge, based on total randomness, was Eddie Shack, who won 4 Stanley Cups with the Toronto Maple Leafs and played with 6 different teams. Also, I believe, the founder of the Pop Shop, known as The Entertainer.
The Entertainer.
Clear the track. Here comes Shaq as Ebenezer Scrooge.
Very nice. I love it.
Yeah. And what was weird is, although this was like truly random, where, anyway, I won't go into the process of it, but my next person sort of connects to Eddie Shack, playing the part of Bob Cratchit from both the Boston Red Sox and the Chicago White Sox, catcher and Hall of Famer, 11-time All-Star, 1972 Rookie of the Year, Carlton Fisk.
I was already writing that down when you were just giving the description. While you were talking about what teams he was playing for and how well he was, I just started writing Carlton Fisk before you even named him. And I'm an old enough fart to remember watching Eddie Shack on playing for the Leafs on TV way back in the early 70s kind of thing. So
now is this a pre-mustache, pre-perm Shack? Because I only remember the mustache and perm Shack.
I think he had a mustache and some kind of hair thing.
Yeah, going on. And so I guess we're on to Tiny Tim. This one was, again, totally random, drawn from a hat.
Don't say Yuri Sirha. Don't say Yuri Sirha.
No, I have no more athletes. I don't think. No, you know him as Quincy and the messy member of the Odd Couple, Jack Klugman, as Tiny Tim.
Wow. He was a very good actor, though. He could pull it. If anyone could pull off Tiny Tim. Plus, also, you've got the, like, if we're talking about now and doing a film now, after what they did with Lord of the Rings, with the Hobbits, and what they did with Harry Potter, and the person that played the guy that was looking after all the animals and the creatures, Hagrid. What they're able to do nowadays with the technology, you can have Jack Klugman playing Tiny Tim now, I believe.
That's right.
And do a good job of it, too.
All righty. So Schrodinger's cast.
Now,
what do you have, David, for your ghosts?
I've got for the past, present, and yet to come. What I've got is I got the spirit of Christmas past. I have Michael Jordan, who won the Olympic gold in 84 and 92 in basketball. This is a more of an interesting choice, is the spirit of Christmas present, because I wanted a big kind of guy. I got Harold Sakata, who's best known as Odd Job.
Oh, nice.
In Dr. No.
Oh, right.
He actually won the 1948 silver medal in weightlifting.
And also, I think, bowler flicking.
Yeah, bowler flicking. He definitely won an honorable mention, for sure. And then as a spirit of Christmas yet to come, I have Caitlyn Jenner, who in another life won
the
decathlon in 76. And I thought, if you're talking about the future how things are, then I think Caitlyn Jenner is a perfect choice for the spirit of Christmas yet to come.
Yeah, and who knew that Dickens would lend himself to athletic interpretations, you know, the way that apparently his work does. Okay, so my final three for the ghosts from A Christmas Carol, once again, done totally randomly. My ghost of Christmas past was in the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers, The Howling, and the Twilight Zone movie, Kevin McCarthy.
Very nice. One of my favorite actors. And that film, The Invasion of the Body Snatchers with Kevin McCarthy, is still one of the most underrated and great horror and science fiction movies of all time. And real scares. And brilliant and psychological.
I'm pretty sure that he was in Creepshow too, but I didn't really have time to check it out. But I'm pretty sure he is in the crate episode of Creepshow.
Okay, yeah, there was also a film with Raquel Welch called like Kansas City Bombers or something. Like she was playing this roller.
Oh, the roller derby one.
Or Darby. Yeah. Roller Darby, I mean, sorry.
Darby, that's right. She was a clerk. She worked as a clerk for the roller derby.
For the roller derby, yep. And she was great in it, of course. I mean, we all have a bit of a crush on her. But Kevin McCarthy was in it, playing sort of this lecherous owner of the whole rink or whatever it is, and not a really nice guy. So, but Kevin McCarthy can do anything, basically.
Yep.
Now, true enough. What do you got for Schrodinger's cast, sir?
For a present, for the Ghost of Christmas present, I was not happy with this one, but I did not fudge it because this is the name that came up and I'm going with it because now, once I do these names, by the way, I have a master list and I remove them from the list. So it was Elon Musk was the ghost of Christmas present. And that's all I'm going to say about that because, again, total randomness.
Well, why does Elon Musk guard his musk? Courage.
He must?
No, courage.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Okay, I've gone too far.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm not sure about that one. My ghost of Christmas yet to come. And drawn from the hat was... His actual name was Bob Homm, or Home, but I think you pronounce it Homm, Bob, H-O-M-M-E. He was on a show, mostly a Canadian show, although it started in Wisconsin, ran from 1954 to 1988, and he was the Friendly Giant. So I had the Friendly Giant as... Actually, that works out, because I do like the tall folk in as my ghost yet to come. So, yeah, look up, look way up, or is it just way up?
It's way but somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's my and our Schrodinger's cast.
And I'll have to say, I have seen my share of Friendly Giant episodes back when I was young.
Oh, yeah. And wow, is it possible this is our final episode of the calendar year 2022?
It is. That's our A Christmas Carol episode. And it was great to be back after our couple of month break at the end of the season. We are planning on building that sort of in, so we're not just going week in, week out. So we have a chance to catch our breaths and to prepare for the next season. So it's nice to be back.
Oh, definitely. And please check out all the old shows, too, because we've got a lot of stuff there. There's a lot of content. Remember to catch us on your favorite podcast provider. We are out there on Spotify. And please like and subscribe. You can check out our website where it all began at numeric2of.ca. Facebook is Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi, and we may still be on Twitter, which is at @2Old Farts Sci-Fi. But, you know, I've actually been listening to some of our old shows. I listened to our Christmas show sort of to prepare for today, and I guess that's kind of narcissistic, but it was fun. I enjoyed it, Dave. Yeah, enjoy your holidays, folks. No matter what you do, have a good time and
enjoy your egg, your days, chicken milk, or whatever that. Chicken
that's right.
Stuff
enjoy
is.
Your chicken milk, and remember, yeah. Days will be getting longer soon. So, ride it out, folks.
I am David Klink,
and I'm Troy Harkin.
See you all for our next episode of Two Old Farts
Talk Sci-Fi.